Welcome back. I'm Elena, and you are listening to Naked Talk Radio. Today's show is about the five myths or beliefs about men that keep them stuck in relationships and in life. They are disempowering stereotypes, and they may be more than just a little familiar to you. Joining me today is Dr. Adam Scheck, a regular expert on Naked Talk Radio. He is a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in men's issues, relationship issues, and couples counseling in Los Angeles. He's currently director of psychology training at Airport Marina Counseling Services, and he is here today to allow me to pick his brain. Dr. Adam Scheck, thanks for always being so willing to get naked.
My pleasure. Start picking.
Start picking. You know, I just had a flashback to I used to have a pet monkey when I was a kid, and the monkey would hop on our backs and start looking through our hair to pick out little bugs. Hopefully they didn't find any, but when you said start picking, I just had a little flashback of jumping on your back and picking through your hair. Is that wrong?
Well, grooming behavior is a wonderful mating ritual, so we can talk about it later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that off air.
Offline.
Okay, so these myths, they are basically perceptions and beliefs, right, that we have?
Yes.
And they've been around for a long time. Any idea on where they originated? And frankly, even more importantly, like most generalizations, is there actually some grain of truth to them?
Well, you know, normally when I'm on your show, I'm talking about couples, and as the passion doctor, I've been helping couples bring the passion back to their relationship for a long time, but I've been noticing that while half my practice are couples, the other half really tend to be men these days, and which is unusual because men are more reluctant to enter counseling or therapy, so I've really been trying to pay attention to what's the best way to help men, because again, they come in for issues of business and relationship. And these five myths seem to be something that I've just tracked and noticed in the men I've worked with over the last 20 years. Seem to, you know, be the big issues that seem to be the stuck points in relationships. And yes, there is a grain of truth in them. And you know, I believe that we can change, that we can shift our focus, we can change our behavior, we can be more of who we truly are, and we don't have to be stuck with these myths. It'd be rude to just share what they are and say, guess what? It's just the way it is.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yep.
Well, I think we always have the opportunity to shift something, to create change, and just because there's a I like this term, a thrown way of being, you know, kind of a way of being when we're not paying attention, when we're not being powerful, we just end up doing it this other way. I think that that's where the grain of truth is we have tendencies toward being this way, but I don't think anything really seals our fate because we have choice about everything.
I think we have free will, as you said, and it takes consciousness, it takes awareness, because you call it thrown, I call it cruise control. You know, we go on cruise control when we're not paying attention, and that's really the demise of spontaneity, of excitement, of passion, of connection, is just being on automatic.
Yeah, so I would say it's not so much that these myths are true as much as, in fact, I would even say that they're a lie, because we don't have to be that way, and certainly not all men are like this. But it does require certain consciousness to be willing and able to change it. But here's the other thing. It's not just men who buy into these. I mean, we'll cover them in a second, but women do too, and that's got to perpetuate the problem.
Well, I think that's more the problem than anything, because it becomes a cop-out for both sexes. Mm. It becomes, oh, you're just like this, and, you know, I can't help it, you can't help it, and we all buy into it, and we learn to accommodate, we learn to settle, we learn to compromise, and compromise usually doesn't work too well in relationships.
You know, it's funny, because it's one thing to compromise on, you know, to agree to disagree and compromise on a solution.
Yes.
But people, that word compromise gets thrown around a lot, like as if it's a good thing. And the truth of the matter is we compromise our morals, we compromise our values, we compromise our power. None of that is good. I just want to be clear. Compromise is not always the most effective place to go.
Right. Well, there's compromise in terms of negotiation of activities and priorities, and there's compromising who you are and compromising your values. And I think that that never works.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, all right. Now, you wrote a special report on this, which I loved, by the way. And you did
Thanks.
It in the context, you're welcome. You did it in the context of Men After 50 for your site at menafter50.com. But isn't this info really valuable for all men and frankly, for all men and for their partners?
Absolutely. It's these myths impact every man, every heterosexual relationship, and perhaps gay relationships as well. But it's certainly, I think it's true for anyone. I just started menafter50.com because I think it's an underserved demographic. I think that men, as they get a little older, start to face a lot of existential issues. As I'm getting older, some things are falling away, some things aren't quite as sharp and clear as they used to be, some things are better than ever, and it's facing those changes, embracing them, and acknowledging after half a century on the planet, I've got some wisdom, I've accumulated some experience, I have something to offer. But these myths are accurate or inaccurate for everyone, and I think we need to just start with them, but I'm happy to share them, and happy to talk about any and all of them, time permitting, and
let's cover them all. I think, I think that they're, we'll say right now in no particular order, but I think that they're all equally important, and so let's go ahead and cover them.
Okay, so the five male myths, from my perspective, and the ones I cover in this special report are, first, men don't like to communicate or don't like to share their feelings.
And you know what's crazy is the first thing I thought of when I read this was that if his partner believes this myth too, she may not even open up the potential or the possibility of communication with him under the pretense that men don't like to communicate. And then she gets to accuse him of not being a good communicator.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy one more time. But let's go through all five, and then whatever is grabbing you, we will talk about there. And if anyone wants to call in with their perspectives, happy to address any questions, too. So men don't like to communicate. Next one, men are afraid of commitment. Big one. Next, men's top priorities are power, success, and money. The fourth, men are only attracted to looks and are only interested in sex. And the fifth and final one, men don't want to be with powerful, smart, successful partners. They're intimidated.
Okay, so let's break them down.
Okay, let's break it down. So, where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with men don't like to communicate or share their feelings. Now, I think that those are kind of two different pieces, right? Communication and sharing feelings. Can men communicate without oversharing their feelings? I mean, I do kind of have that. I do buy into this belief a little bit. I believe that, and not all men, but that some men are not interested in, maybe it's that they just don't want to clock a lot of time there. They're okay having that level of connection and communication, but maybe it's just that women hash it out over and over and over.
Yeah, I would say it, you know, but that's a myth of women, that women tend to perseverate on a topic and never let it go, true or false. But I think men do like to communicate, and there's a different purpose, there's a different style in communication for men. If we're communicating man to man, we are communicating to define our power structure, to define the hierarchy, to maintain our status and our independence. So we don't communicate necessarily by verbalizing as much, by sharing feelings, by getting into that. We express ourselves, communicate, bond with other men by sharing an activity, by working together on a project, by doing something. And women, on the other hand, communicate with each other to build connection, to build intimacy. Women bond by spending time together and sharing together. It's not necessarily the same for men, so we get into trouble when we try and create intimacy based on the same strategies.
So it's not that men don't like to communicate, it's that they just communicate differently.
We communicate differently, and generally, if we're going to communicate, or if someone's communicating with us, and this is a stereotype, and yet there's some truth to it as well, we're assuming someone's sharing something because they want to solve a problem. They want to deal with an issue. Communicating is a request for advice, for input, not
for a solution,
a desire. Yeah, we're not looking for intimacy in that. We're just looking to help out.
But does it help to know, if you know that women connect that way and create intimacy that way, can he open up enough, participate enough so that he can then connect and create intimacy the way that he likes to create intimacy, which is physically?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have to be aware of each other's styles. And, you know, this is where the compromise or more the stretch. I think, you know, in the couples therapy I do with couples, I encourage each of them to stretch to give the other what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also shared on a radio show with you before about the 80-20 rule,
mm-hmm.
where 80% of the good comes from 20% of the activity. And we need to plan that 20% of communication that has to be in that more feminine style of sharing feelings, of giving the woman what she wants on that. That may saturate a man. That may overwhelm a man. That may be all he can take, that 20%. So
but 20% of communication may just equal 80% of sex. So
well,
might be
it's
worth
a fair
exploring.
Trade, man.
Exactly.
It's a fair trade, but women need to recognize that as well as men.
It's, yeah.
Our emotional muscles aren't up to the task of doing that much more.
Yeah.
And that's, you could say it's a stereotype, but I would say it's also
wiring. Yeah, I agree. I do think it's interesting, that particular myth. It does kind of make you wonder which came first, the myth or mm-hmm. the way of being, because the idea that women are naggy or whatever the you know, feminine version of this myth is,
right.
We really do, when we go into relationship believing those myths and treating those people as if that's true about them, mm-hmm. it's cyclical. It sort of takes on a life of its own and, like you said, becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. All right, let's go to number two. I thought this was an interesting one, too. Men are afraid of commitment. I don't find that to be true, because in my experience, I actually find that sometimes men are the ones who are so loyal mm-hmm. that they're willing to stay in and fight for a relationship long after it's over.
Well, I think the truth is it's not that men are afraid of commitment. I think men may be slow to commit, and yet I believe that once a man has made a commitment, has gone through whatever process it takes to get there, I think we are dogged, determined, obstinate to keep things through mm-hmm. on that. And it's a challenge because, on the one hand, there's that bad PR that having a commitment is going to inhibit your freedom.
Mm.
And yet I think the truth is that commitment creates freedom for us, gives us a secure base to launch our lives from, to have that commitment, and it's important.
Yes, I totally agree. Okay, number three, men's top priorities are power, success, and money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, come on. Aren't they? At least for a while. Is it possible that maybe this is just a temporary one and then men outgrow it? But isn't it true for every dude at some point?
Well, I think there's a truth to it for men, and I think there's a truth for women on this, too. It's, you know, no matter how evolved, we start to become psychologically, spiritually, whatever goes on, I think at the same time, we're biological creatures. And biologically, there's a piece of our DNA that hasn't caught up yet that says, man needs to provide, man needs to be the hunter-gatherer, man needs to be successful. And, you know, women don't object to a successful man. It's, you know, my mother used to say, it's just as easy to find someone that's successful as you know, poor. So it's a tricky one because we want to say that it's not important, and yet it really is. And in our society, men are punished for not being successful.
That's,
you know,
a good
point. from a biological model, the successful hunter, the king, the landowner, the baron, gets the best women, gets the best genetic mating material, and you know, poor men probably don't have as good a quality in that way. They don't have as good a choice. They can find quality people, of course.
Right.
But again, this is the myth we perpetuate.
No, that's a really good point. And actually, the point you made about DNA and not, you know, the evolution of DNA not having caught up to us, you know, there's no guarantee we're not going to get all, what's that movie with Mel Gibson? Oh, would have been so much funnier if I remembered what it was. You know what I'm talking about, Julian?
Mad Max.
There's no guarantee that it's not going to get all Mad Max out there again, and we're going to need that. So I'm not so quick to ditch the old primal DNA stuff either. And I think you have a good point. Men are kind of punished for not having that. So you can't punish them for making it a priority and then punish them for not making it a priority, too.
Well, you're caught between a rock and a hard place. And as you were saying before, too, you were suggesting that men, as they get older, perhaps abandon some of this. And Carl Jung, who was one of the greatest psychologists of the 20th century, really looked and said a man, you know, spends the first half of his life building material success, developing a strong ego in the world, and spends the second half transcending that, getting that it's not... all that it's cracked up to be, that there's more to life.
Yeah, really good. Really good point. All right, you know what? Let's do this. Let's take a quick break because I really want to dive into the other two as well.
Okay.
So we're going to do that. Stick around. When we come back, we'll take a closer look at the rest of these myths and, more importantly, how to bust them. I'm Elena here with Dr. Adam Scheck, and you are listening to Naked Talk Radio. Welcome back to Naked Talk Radio. Getting naked with me today is Dr. Adam Scheck, author and licensed clinical psychologist specializing in men's issues, relationship issues, and couples counseling. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Adam.
Thanks.
Yeah, so we've been talking about the five myths that keep men stuck, and some of them might strike a chord for people listening, either because you believed it or maybe someone else believed it about you or you believe it about somebody else. But just to recap, the first one was that men don't like to communicate or share their feelings. The second, men are afraid of commitment. The third is that men's top priorities are power, success, and money. And then where we left off is the fourth, and that is that men are only attracted to looks and are only interested in sex. Myth?
Well, from an evolutionary perspective, certainly men are interested in looks and sex just to perpetuate the species. I mean, physiologically speaking, we're attracted on a primal level to women who exhibit the physical signs of fertility and good childbearing genetics. That's the primal part of it. We're drawn to youth, to symmetrical features that imply good DNA and not diseases. Breasts, hips, lips, the sexual characteristics. And, you know, we are drawn to that. It may be different from one culture to another, but it's true. And I was listening to your show a little bit before I got on, and you were talking about the studies showing that that men a majority of men will end a relationship if their partner puts on too much weight. So that may be part of the reasoning behind that, is they may not be as good breeding stock from a basic genetic level, not from a conscious level, that they're doing that. And I think the other side, you were saying that for women, size matters. And again, same thing for genetic breeding, size matters.
It's interesting, though, because I totally hear what you're saying. And yet... you live in L.A. I grew up in L.A. Is silicone good stock? You know, is being so thin that you have to take your size zero clothes in? Is that good genetic stock? Because I think that on one hand, I really hear what you're saying and I totally get it. And on the other hand, I think we have evolved our interpretation of attraction over time, too. And hence... you know, the whole idea. I mean, to me, good hips, good lips, good breasts subconsciously implies good stock.
Yes.
And that there might be a draw there that you don't even consciously know. But how do you explain, you know, this whole new crop or breed of attractive women, which is, you know, women who are 30 who are having plastic surgery done on their face?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't.
It's sad. I think it's manipulation by advertising, by the establishment again in that, and they're trying to game the system. They're gaming our genetics.
Yeah.
It's the truth.
Yeah, I mean, and trying to game age, too.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah. I mean, it works for a short term, but it doesn't work. And the truth is, we're not only attracted to looks, and I've shared this with you before, we're attracted again psychologically just as much as physically. We're attracted psychologically, and, you know, as children, we absorb what we see growing up. We see mommy and daddy. We see what they look like. We see what they sound like. We experience what they smell like and how they interact. So we're also drawn to a partner that embodies certain psychological qualities, the good qualities and the negative qualities of our caregivers growing up, and that, you know, can combat it too. So we may have one type that reminds us more of mom or dad, and then we may have the other type that's more the genetic base of what society says is there. So it's a conflict. We're confused, and we are just confused about it, and it's really unfortunate. As you said, the system is being gamed, and long-term it's not going to work. You're going to see someone, but in L.A., personally, I like someone with a little more meat on their bones, and the anorexic big silicone look isn't all that it's cracked up to be.
Well, it's good to know there's someone out there. No, I'm kidding. I think there are plenty of people who can appreciate a more real woman, let's say, right, with all her real and original parts. But let me ask you this. Why do you think so many men, particularly in their 50s, are chasing women in their 30s? I had a theory about it when I worked for the dating service, and these men would get married at like 30 and then they'd get divorced at 50 and they'd find themselves attracted to women who were 30. I thought that they were just kind of picking up where they left off and forgot that they had aged 20 years and that it might be time to kind of revamp what the ideal other person might look like. But maybe that too has something to do with childbearing years, because men clearly can bear children well into whatever, you know, their 80s.
Yes, and there are many men in their late 40s, 50s starting second families, and perhaps they want to, quote, do it right this time from the last. So there is that attraction. I think it's, as well, psychologically, what I would call what the Jungians might call the rejuvenation mysteries. If I am attracted to a younger woman, part of it is I want to incorporate that youth again. I want to recapture. It's like I'm not trying to recapture her youth. I'm trying to recapture my youth.
By proxy, yeah.
Yeah, it's a projection and a recapturing that projection psychologically. So I understand it, and yet in my professional experience, it rarely works. If there's too large a gap in age, there's just not a relatability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, and it can work. I'm not saying it doesn't, but it seems to be the exception to the rule in my experience.
Sure, yeah. Okay, let's talk about the last one. Men don't want to be with or are intimidated by powerful, smart, successful partners. I kind of hope this one's a myth. I'm counting on it, because dumbing it down isn't the answer, and there are a lot of powerful, smart, successful women out there.
There are, and unfortunately, there are a lot of women who dumb it down, at least in their, you know, 20s and 30s, to try and fit in, whether they were told by their mothers to do that, or whether they just kind of picked it up themselves. And it's unfortunate, because while men, if we go back to the biology of the hunter-gatherer, we want to take care. We have a deep biological instinct to take care of our mate, to take care of our family, to take care of our community. At the same time, I really believe we want to be challenged. We want a partner who can show up as an equal to really push us to grow, to be better than we are. So I think it's a myth. And again, a big chunk of that is psychology. Again, it depends, what were you raised with? I was raised by a single mother who was very independent and strong, so I've always been drawn to powerful women. So it's again, what's in your psychological profile? What's in your makeup? What's the psychology and what's the physiology of it all?
Interesting. There's so much more going on than just what we think is our random preference. You know, we really are very much driven by experiences we had when we were younger. That's for sure. Let me ask you this, though. I mean, I would say that for any man who is intimidated, it's kind of a red flag, wouldn't you think, that somebody, that he's not really stepping into his own power, to be so concerned about your power and how that might adversely affect him implies that he's not really standing on solid ground in his own power. So these myths are debunkable when we're in a healthy space, right? I mean, a man has to be willing to step into and own who he is, in order to be able to really, start to break these down.
I'd say that's the truth, and his partner needs to be in a good space as well to explore the other side of the myths, you know, the collusion with the myths or the other side. I mean, there are plenty of myths that keep women stuck, but that's a whole different, you know.
Show.
Different show.
That is a different show, but there's plenty of space for women to ditch the disempowering beliefs, too, to really hold a space for him to be his best self instead of holding the space for him to be whatever, you know, myths she's glommed onto.
There's a lot of support these days for women to be empowered, for women to be successful, for women to really fully actualize themselves. And I think in some ways there's not as much anymore for men, which is why I work more with men, and particularly in the men after 50 population on that, because if a man gets too strong, there's the shadow side, and now the administration is taking over, the government's falling apart, the world's falling apart, because when men get too strong, they go to war, they get greedy, and the whole shadow takes over. So for a man to be strong and powerful and conscious isn't that acceptable in certain ways, or it doesn't have a lot of support.
Yeah, and there hasn't been a lot of modeling for it.
That's the sad truth of this, absolutely true.
But you know what? We're a new generation that can, and men over 50 in particular, because again, if we go back to the Jungian theory that we spend the first half of our lives fighting for all of that stuff and the second half transcending it, this really is the opportunity for men to be able to debunk these myths by modeling the behaviors that are the antithesis of this.
Yes.
And by not giving up who they really are either, because, you know, some of it does go back to men are wired differently and men shouldn't be like women.
Very true. I think it's important for men to start to really connect to who they are, connect to their power in a communal way as men, as well as to help the community, help the families grow. And if the men can do this, can debunk the myths for themselves, they're going to model that for their kids. They're going to model that for their communities, so the new generations growing up can have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, can step into that. Exactly. I love that you do this, and you do men's groups. So in terms of that sense of community, and you do them in LA, and you do them in a virtual format over the internet, which I think is great too, because I think even for some people, there's more anonymity there that way, which maybe makes it easier to step outside the box and do something like this. So I really love that. And by the way, you can get your copy of this free special report. Just go to menafter50.com. Doesn't matter if you're over 50. It certainly is applicable if you are, but there's a lot of great information on that blog. And this free special report is just chock full. I mean, we only really scratched the surface of the content that's in that special report. So Dr. Adam Scheck, I just love to hear your take on things. And I love that you're doing this, you know, that you are addressing men's issues, because I think another myth is that men don't want help. I think that, here you go, number six, men don't want to do something about it. And I don't think that's true. I think we as a society have believed that myth, so we don't offer a whole lot of options for them. And you are really changing that with Men After 50 and with the work that you do. So thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And women can look for this report too. I have just as many women checking it out, because again, you want to know, the more you know about men, the more knowledge is power.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on your list. I've always been on your lists. I love your information. I think you write some of the most interesting blogs that are out there, because they're relevant. So even when they're compelling or salacious, they're relevant. So I love that about your work and about your voice. So again, thank you. It's always good to get naked with you.
It is compelling and salacious. It doesn't get any better than that.
It really doesn't. Our time is up. Thanks for spending a naked hour with me. I'm Elena McMillan. You can keep in touch with me on Facebook or through my site at elenamcmillan.com. Up.